can hear the motorway in the background here, but just listen to these bugs. And they're killing. This is in the Shizenkyo Gwen, or the Nature Research Institute. About 15-20 minutes walk from my apartment.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. I recorded that short clip last weekend when I was in the, as I said, the Nature Research Institute near my house, at my apartment here in Tokyo. And I just wanted to sort of add it there to give you an idea of how noisy it was in the. I'm going to call it a park, but it's ran by the government, and it's really for nature research, but it's also laid out in a way that you can pay your 300 yen or $3 or whatever and have a walk around. And today we're going to talk about a number of shots that I got in there. It was the 28th of July when I visited. I posted 10 images on the website, and we're going to take a look at 9 of those today. I was shooting using a 100mm f2.8 macro lens, often with a 25mm extension tube, and a pretty specialist lens from Canon called the MP-E65mm f2.8 1-5x macro. I was also using a Canon macro twin light MT-24EX flash unit, which is made up of 2 strobe heads that fit onto the front of the lens, and on occasion, you know, also I was using the Speedlight 550EX to throw a little bit of light into the background. I've been into many techniques that I'll talk about today in the episodes 42 to 44, which was basically a series that I did on macro photography. But today we'll see how I put this gear to practical use and get some great sort of larger than life size macro shots as well. Before we go on, I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of those of you that nominated the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast in the 2007 Podcast Awards. Thanks to you, we made it through to the final list of nominees in the education category, and voting has started from July 28th and will go on until August the 11th. I'd like to remind you that you can vote every day, every 24 hours, and every vote counts. So please do set a reminder or do whatever you need to do to remind yourself to go to www.podcastawards.com every day until August the 18th and submit your vote. You'll find the podcast listed under the education section, as I say. You need to provide your name and a valid email address, as many of the votes are validated by clicking on the link that you'll receive by email afterwards. There's some pretty tough competition, but if you think that this is the best photography podcast that you listen to, and I know that many of you do because you've mailed me to tell me so, then please do support the MBP podcast by voting as often as you can during this next week or so. And if you know anyone else that probably would like to vote but may not be listening right now, do drop them a line and remind them to also support us. So thanks in advance for all of your help, and now let's get on to the main topic for today and delve into the macrocosm. So as I said, the Nature Research Center is really, or Institute, is not really like a standard park, like most of the ones that you can visit in Tokyo. It's really left almost totally wild. There are a few ponds, and obviously there are footpaths to sort of allow you to go around there. But apart from that, much of the area is overgrown grasses with lots of trees and woods. This means, of course, that at this time of year there are mosquitoes everywhere, and for some reason they really love to sort of suck on my blood. I wear long trousers even when it's like 35 degrees Celsius or 95 Fahrenheit, which it was on the day I visited last weekend. But the trousers are lightweight, quick-drying outdoor trousers, so the mozzies can sort of stick their little needly mouths straight through them. Because of that, I had sprayed them with super-strength mosquito repellent before leaving the house, and I also had a battery-powered repellent whirring away while dangling from my photographer's vest. And still, I, having been in the place for maybe 5 minutes, my right knee started to itching, and I realized that I'd already been gotten. When I did take a look when I got home later, I found that I'd been bitten 9 times on the right knee, above the right knee on the leg, 6 times on the left knee, once on the right calf, once on my right shoulder, and would you believe, once behind my left ear. So that's 18 times, and I'm sure most of them were in the first 5 minutes of me arriving. I'm kind of used to it now, but having grown up in Britain where there were no mosquitoes, I hear that there are a few now, but I've no immunity to them, so the stings tend to swell up pretty badly, and I'm sort of here all itchy while I was preparing for this week's podcast, and now they pretty much died down, but It's all expected, though. When shooting in such places, you're going to get bitten. Just trying to sort of live with it the best you can is the only thing to do. I've mentioned just now that I was wearing a photographer's vest. I cannot seem to shoot effectively without this vest. I should probably say, while we're talking about wearing long trousers to keep the mozzies out and things like that, that because I wear this vest in the summertime as well, I chose one that has a mesh back for good ventilation in hot weather. It also has like a patch of cloth that zips into place for additional warmth, though, in the colder months. So I like this design so much that I have two of these, especially for photography. And I wear them exactly the same thing that I can. That means that I can take the second one with me on longer journeys. So that if I get a little bit pangy, then especially in the summer months, I'll be able to wash one and wear the other one, if I'm in hotels and things. So anyway, let's get down to looking at some shots. And the first one is image number 1495, which I spotted not long after getting all of my kit ready and had started walking down the path into the more heavily wooded area. This is the shell of a cicada, or I think you call it a cicada in English, which is what was making all of the noise in the recording earlier. These things come out each year having spent a whole lot of time underground, ranging from just a few years to up to 17 years for some species. And then in the final stage, as a nymph, they climb out of the ground. And then they sort of attach themselves to something like a tree trunk, or as in this photo, the post of a rope fence to keep people like me out of the woods. And they break out of this outer shell and then sort of dry for a while. And then they start the search for a mate. And having mated, the female inserts her eggs into the bark of a tree where the grub feeds before going underground again, and the whole process starts again. I'll drop a link to a Wikipedia page on these bugs into the show notes, just in case you're interested. But here we can actually see, if you look on the head and down the back, you can actually see the slit where the cicada has broken through its and sort of cast off its shell. So some more details about the shot. This image was captured shortly before 3 p.m, so the light is starting to warm up a little towards the late-ish afternoon. I used natural light here because it was bright enough and the quality of light was really pleasing, as you can see. I stopped the aperture down to f5 so that we could get a little bit of depth of field there, but I didn't go much more as I was looking for that effect with the background. And I really wanted to sort of lead our eyes to the glossy membrane that covered the Shkarda's eye before it shed its skin. It also really sort of, you know, like I say, it helps us to get rid of any distractions. I get a nice smooth green background there to the right. And basically that, you know, really is the thing that I'm looking for most of the time in my photography. So I bumped the ISO up to 400 and I set the shutter speed to 1/125th of a second. I was in manual mode and I had to shoot a couple of trial images to stop the glare from the eye membrane from blowing out. And I shot this with a 100mm f2.8 macro lens at life size or 1:1 magnification. I know that this, I know that it was the life size 1:1 magnification because I had simply set the lens's manual focus and turning the focusing ring as close to the closest focusing distance that it would go, and then just kept shifting my tripod forward until the subject came into focus. I wasn't using my focusing rails at this time, so you know it took a little bit of doing, but as the subject was inanimate, I could take my time doing this, probably at the expense of a few more mozzie bites, I probably can imagine. I composed the shot with the shell in the right third, which also enabled me to include a few of the year rings on the cut tree stump that was used for the fence post. I would have preferred to have found this muddy little shedded skin on a more natural looking object like a tree trunk, but this is the reality. It's part of nature that these creatures will use objects that man has put in place for these purposes. And with it all sort of having a nice earthy brown tone, I think it still works quite well. In the next image, number 1496, we really do delve into the realms of larger than life size with a shot of a tiny little fly that I found on top of a daisy type flower that itself was not more than probably around 8 or 9 millimeters in diameter. The MPE 65mm macro lens that I shot this with is basically has no way at all to focus the lens. Well, I say no way at all. The zoom ring on the lens, it has one action, and that is to move through the magnification from life size to 5x life size. But you can use this for focusing to a certain extent, but as you do, you're actually zooming through the magnification range. So if you want to shoot at a certain magnification, the only way to focus is to move the camera with the lens closer or further away from the subject. This requires some really fine tuning, so it's useful to have the camera mounted on focusing rings. Also realize that once you get this large, the depth of field is less than a millimeter, even when you're stopped down to f11 or f16, so the slightest breeze is going to make focusing even more difficult. So to overcome this, I was using a Wimberley clamp, which is a plant clamp. It clips onto the leg of the tripod and then you sort of bend it around with a flexible arm and you get it so that the head, which is pretty much like a clothes peg, is right where you want it to be, on, you know, where the stem of the plant is, and then you just sort of carefully squeeze it and move it over so that it clamps the stem of the plant, but be very careful not to damage it. If you don't get it into the little hole in the, there's two holes, a smaller one and a larger one. If you don't get it into that, then you can damage the plant, and we don't want to do that. But basically, once you get that sort of into that groove, then it's going to stop the plant from blowing around in the breeze so much. Life size basically means that if you photograph something 65mm across with a full-size sensor camera, it's going to fill the frame exactly. If you go down to 5x life size, which is the maximum this lens will go to, you could fill the frame with something just 7.2mm across. If you want to look at the lens itself, as I said earlier, it's covered in episodes 42 to 44. There's also a photo of the Macro Twinlight MT24EX, the strobe or flash system attached to that. I think it was the last one of those podcasts. So you can check that out there as well. It's actually what the number of that image is 1022 in my gallery. So if you want to just go across and punch that in into the field on the top page or the podcast page and then hit the orange button, the way you would do with the numbers that I always call out, you'll be able to see that as well. I'm not going to go into much more detail about this today, and I'm not going to include the image here because we've got a lot to look at today. To briefly explain the twin light, though, it's two individual strobe heads that fit onto a rail that fits on the front of the lens, and you can move the heads around the rail sort of system there to any position and also adjust the angle at which they point at the subject. So in this image, I had them pointing right in at the subject, maybe at around 45 or 50 degrees from the front of the front element of the lens. There is an option of a lens hood for this lens, and it actually looks like a chameleon's eye more than a lens hood. This is because you're focusing on subjects that are so close to the front of the lens that you run the risk of getting light from the flash units actually going straight into the front of the lens, reducing the opening, though, with this chameleon's eye-like lens hood. It has like a hole in it, I guess it would be a cone with a hole in the front. And the hole is about a centimeter or so wide. And this basically is enough for the lens. The lens itself only has a very small opening at the front. It's just enough to keep all of the stray light from sort of going into the front and ruining your shots. A little bit of advice on using the flash itself while we're at it. This setup, really, what I basically do is I drop the camera into manual mode if I'm not already in it for any other reasons, and I set the aperture and the shutter speed to what I want and then just shoot a trial image. And I usually find that the camera will then figure out how much light it needs to shoot out to give adequately light the subject without much problem. When shooting really close like this, when the subject is not totally filling the frame, the camera does tend to get a little bit, not the camera itself, but the meter gets a little bit overzealous, so I have to bring it back down a bit. There are also some slightly complicated complications with the apertures and a few other things that affect this. So I tend to find that when shooting at distances like this, it's similar subjects to this, I do a little bit of flash exposure compensation, and here it's to the tune of around minus one stop. This is not your standard exposure compensation note, but the flash compensation. It's important that you change this either on the back of the flash itself or via the camera body. I usually use the buttons on the back of the flash. And don't change the exposure compensation, as that won't give you the right effect. I believe that basically what that will make happen is the underexposure that you do with the standard compensation will just make the flash do more, and you won't end up really getting the results that you want. You'll also notice that when there's nothing much very close in the background, the light from these flash heads will not reach it. That's partly because of the power, but also because, remember, you're angling them in, so all of the light that doesn't hit the subject is just going to go off one side and to both sides in the opposite direction to the angle that you're pointing the flash heads. So you're really not lighting anything up with these unless you do something else, and that is to link up a second flash remotely. The 550EX that I have, and the 580 as well, a number of the Canon Speedlight flashes will allow you to do this. And the Twinlight actually incorporates a transmitter so that you don't have to use something else. It will automatically allow you to operate a second or third flash off camera. And you can sort of just build that up, and it will talk to them as necessary. And what that will allow you to do is to throw a little bit of light into the background. And I like to do that when time or the subject will allow me. But I also find that this surreal, totally black background is quite pleasant in some shots as well. Here I think it actually adds to the effect and totally sort of isolates the subject on the flower head and allows us to really sort of study it. Also, the background here was quite a way away, so a second flash would have been useful if I'd have sort of bumped up the compensation a little, but I would have had to have placed it quite a way away, and I really just didn't have time to set it up. Another thing that I noticed here for the first time was that the light has created quite a beautiful rainbow effect on the wings of this tiny little fly. It's also difficult to see in the web-sized image, but there are a few spots of yellow there visible, which are, when viewed full size, they're distinctly spherical, looking like little fish eggs. And this is actually pollen from the flower on which the fly is standing, but usually it's only recognizable as dust and not as spheres. Both this shot and the next shot were made at 1/100th of a second at f11 with ISO 200, like I said, with the flash set to minus one stop exposure compensation. The magnification here was 3 times life size, perhaps a little more. In the next image, which is number 1497, we can make out these little yellow pollen balls a little better, as I'd moved between 3.5-ish to, well, from 3 to around 3.5, possibly up to around 4 times magnification. The reason for the shift is that as the fly moved around, I tracked it with the zoom ring, using that to refocus rather than the screws on the focusing rails. But either would work if you're not bothered about the exact magnification that you're shooting at. We can get more of a feel for the actual size of the subjects here by the transparent filaments that we can see below the flower head there, through the petals. This is totally uncropped, full-size 35mm image, so I think that you'll be able to appreciate how small these subjects really are. The focus distance to the subject is around 3 centimeters. In front of the lens at this magnification, which always amazes me as to why these guys don't just fly away. Sometimes the subject does just sort of get skitty, but this one, although moving to another flower a few times, kept coming back and allowing me to shoot it. I did get the second flash out, and I used it to light the rock a little bit for a third shot that I uploaded. But this one was actually of the fly's backside, so it's not really a pretty sight, so I decided to sort of not include it today. If you're interested, it's the next one along in the gallery from this shot. While shooting the fly, a large blue dragonfly kept flying up and sitting on the foliage and a bench nearby, and I decided to concentrate on the fly first and then changed lenses for the 100mm macro f2.8 macro with a 25mm extension tube. This gives a magnification of 1.39 times life size when you're focusing at the shortest distance. So it's closer than life size, but not quite as close as the magnification used in the last few shots. The reason that I switched to this lens is because the dragonfly is about 7 or 8 centimeters in length and wingspan probably, or maybe a little bit more, but basically what this means is that with a lens that will only focus at one point when set to life size, the thing is there, it's only going to get smaller as well, but if you can only shoot at life size or higher magnifications, then it's simply not possible to shoot any larger than 36mm wide. Now, if I could get in really close, say if I was able to really, really sort of get up to the dragonfly, then I would hopefully be able to get like a close-up of the head or something like that with those big eyes. That would be an incredible shot. but I wasn't confident that I would be able to get that close. The 100mm, on the other hand, you know, as opposed to the 65mm, will allow me to get a life-size image if I could get close, but, you know, I'm not going to get that close. I was pretty confident that there was no way I was going to be able to get close enough to take a life-size or larger with the 25mm extension tube. So I decided that I needed the ability to focus from a further distance away. And that's the main reason, really, that I switched to the 100, because it gives me the ability to then stand a little bit further back, still get a relatively large, shot of the subject, but I would be focusing at maybe, I don't know, 20 centimeters or more in front of the lens, rather than having to work at just a few centimeters. Basically, just because, as I say, I wasn't confident that I was going to be able to get close enough to work at 1:1 or more. Anyway, the reason I'm telling you this is because, you know, so that you can understand my thinking in changing the lenses in anticipation of a shot. But the dragonfly flew away as soon as I moved just a little bit closer to it. I think I probably got no closer than 5 feet away from it, and it flew away. So it just wasn't going to happen. This was one of those times that I wish that I had one of those nice long 180mm life-size macro lenses from Canon, but there's a lot of other stuff lingering much further up on my somewhat stagnant shopping list right now. With the 100mm f2.8 macro and the 25mm extension tube fitted, though, I focused on a common fly, just a golden-faced sort of common fly that we see everywhere here in Japan, that was sitting on a leaf, just posing for me as I turned around, having stalked for a few moments the dragonfly. We can see this in image number 1499. Once again, I set the lens to manual focus and moved the focusing ring to the shortest focus distance, and then tripped my shutter after the fly came into focus. This time, because the leaf was large enough to fill the frame, there was no dark background to contend with, although I did now have a sort of a second flash ready in my vest pocket. I was using my tripod as a monopod here, which basically, what I mean by that is I had the legs closed together with the clip sort of holding them in place, and I'd extended just one of the legs slightly to get me the right height, with it being just one leg that's on the ground, I could roll the tripod around forward, back and forwards quite easily. This is kind of a happy compromise between a tripod and hand holding, and works pretty well when using the twin light as I was at this time, as you can really work with those sharp bursts of light to freeze things a little bit better. This was shot again at f11, as with the last few shots, but I changed the shutter speed to 1/60th of a second, still at ISO 200. The detail of the shot is pretty amazing, though, as with the last few. I'm really sort of going to spend more time working with the twin light and a second and hopefully soon a third speed light to light the background for more natural-looking lighting. I should mention, too, that before I started today, I shot my Y-Bell card with the twin light and set the camera's custom white balance with that shot. From that point on, I didn't have to change the white balance, and I didn't touch it in post-processing either, except once to just see, move the slider either way of the setting that I got from the white balance, just to see if it could be improved at all, but it really couldn't, so I left it as it was, which really just took a lot of pressure off me to thinking about those sort of things. I knew that the light was going to be the right colour, and basically everything from then on was pretty much automatic. 30 feet or so down the footpath, and I came across a hoverfly that we can see in image number 1500. Feeding on the pollen of a bunch of white flowers that were standing very helpfully about 5 feet above the ground. Again, using the tripod as a monopod, I shot this hoverfly for a few minutes until he flew away. I upped the ISO to 250 and the shutter speed to 1/160th of a second to give me a little bit better chance of freezing this guy as he moved around. There's a little bit of that rainbow effect on the wings again from the twin light, but I was really sort of taken back in this shot with that wonderful glossy gold back of the fly there. I really sort of liked that, the colours that I saw there. I hadn't realised until this point that they were this sort of gold colour, especially when fully lit by the flash. Again, a very sharp shot because of the shooting conditions I was using, and once again shot at 1.39 times life size by pre-focusing. It's really great sort of getting into 100%, on the computer, and look at this, zoom into 100% and poring over the detail in this creature. You can literally just see sort of every hair and body parts that I never even realized that they had. In image number 1501, we can see a grasshopper that I noticed sort of clinging to a large grass stem. This was actually a few feet inside the low rope fence, so I took the camera off the tripod and handheld it, and then sort of pulled the grass towards me and held the tip of the grass with my right hand as I held the camera. And then in my left hand, I held the Speedlight 550 flash unit, and I pointed it down towards the base of the grass. You have to sort of tilt the top. When you're going to point it away from the camera, you have to tilt the top or swivel the top of the 550 or the flash unit so that the front of the lens can still see that it has a line of sight to the twin light so that they can communicate. But basically, that's what I was doing. I got it swiveled around and sort of pointing there into the background, and not entirely successful. But by doing this, I did manage to get a bit of light into the background, stopping it from dropping into total darkness. I thought about raising the ratio of the 550EX, but this guy was sort of getting scared, and he was backing down the grass stem as I shot him, so I decided to leave him alone. There'd be, he's going to be there, or at least one of his relatives is going to be there another day, and I'll be able to get in and really get in a better situation so that I don't have to upset him too much just to get my shot. I really got the feeling this time, again, that this guy was looking back up at me and thinking, oh no, not you again. I sort of always personify my subjects, and I'm just looking at his face as I was looking through the camera and here. It was like, oh no, there's this big guy pointing the camera at me again. Anyway, that's just me. I'm a little bit soft in those respects. Next, we have two examples of the same subject, although with slightly different composition, but one with just the twin light and the second with the twin light and the speed light to light up the background just a little again. The first shot is number 1502. Here we see what the Japanese call a koganemushi, and that is, I'm not really sure what that is in English. It's a type of scarab, and they're really quite common across Japan. This one was sitting happily on a leaf by the pond in the institute, so I decided to get a few frames. The setting's still at f11 with ISO 200 and a shutter speed of 1/160th of a second, and I was still using the 25mm extension tube and focusing on the nearest focus, the focusing distance, and then sort of moving the camera backwards and forwards to focus. Here we can see that the foliage either side of the beetle has gone totally dark, as the light from the twin light is only sort of hitting the closest subject and then going off at the same angle in the other way. And in the next image, though, which is image number 1503, I took the 550EX from the vest pocket and held it such a way that it caught some of the background. Again, slightly rushed as the park was about to close by this time. But you can see here that I do have slightly more colour in the background than the previous shot, especially on the left side where the background is closer. I actually really like the highlights that the twin light has introduced here as well in the front of the shell of the beetle. And again, this is just incredibly sharp, even with, when viewed at 100% on the PC. That's helped, of course, by the fact that I was using a tripod as a tripod here, not as a monopod. But I really am getting good results, very sharp results, using it as a monopod as well. So I don't really know why I just said that. So let's move on to the last shot for today, which was literally the last shot of the day for me too. And that is image number 1504. The one and only thing that I don't like about this Nature Research Institute is that it's run by the city or the government, which means that it's staffed by civil servants. And no offence if you're a civil servant, but especially in Japan, the difference between this sort of place and public sector companies means really that they just sort of finish at office hours. So even though it's light for another 2 hours at this time of year, they kick you out at 5 p.m. I've tried staying in here, actually, but someone actually comes around and actually asks you to leave by about 5 minutes or so to five. So with 10 minutes left, I was almost ready to start walking up towards the gates. And that in itself's about a 5-7 minute walk. But as I started to aim myself that way, I spotted this guy climbing up a plant. And climbing up a plant for many insects means that they're either trying to get to the flower for pollen, or they're trying to get to the highest ground to fly away. And as there are no flowers on this plant, I figured that it was the latter. So there was no time to position the flash, the second flash, even though there was some great greenery in the background. So I just fired off three frames with the twin light as this guy got into position to fly. And of the three, only this last one was crisp and sharp because he was really motoring up the plant. And, this one, I got a nice profile shot, I think. But then he was gone, and I wasn't quick enough to capture him actually taking flight as well. This is called a tiger beetle, by the way, due to the obviously tiger-like markings and colouring. And this one has lost his left antenna somehow, which is a little bit disappointing, but I'm sure that he was much more upset about it than I am. The ISO and the shutter speed were still the same as the last few shots, but the aperture was down to f10 here, and I must admit that this was totally unintentional. I didn't even realise that it had changed until I checked the EXIF data. So I must have just caught the dial with my finger accidentally, jogging it a third of a stop out, probably in a haste to shoot this guy before he flew away. And because it was the last shot of the day, the camera was left that way and I didn't really notice. So that's it for today. I hope that you've enjoyed this virtual trip around one of my local haunts. I dare say that I'll be back here a few more times over the summer, hoping to get better at my macro shots. And I really start to dive into that second flash thing that I'm really trying to find more time and get things going a little bit smoother so that I can just drop it down, forget about it and start shooting. It's always difficult when you're out in it's not really a wild place, but the very overgrown, because there's often nothing that you can put it down on, and hand-holding it is not always an option. And as I mentioned a few times, the subjects are often moving around so quickly that you have to act quickly yourself, and there's just no time to do it. But as I do this sort of photography more, I'm definitely going to find that I myself get better at it. So hopefully at some time in the near future, I'll report back with some better results. I'm happy with the crop for the day. I think that I got some very nice shots, and again, as I say, a lot of them very, very sharp. So no grumbles, but you know, the thing that I really want to improve on is this the technique of using the second flash. So anyway, I will report back as that gets more fluid, and hopefully it'll be worth sort of hanging around to listen to that. Once again, if you are interested in more of an overall macro tutorial with information on techniques and the gear involved, go back to episodes 42 to 44 where I covered this in some detail. Also, don't forget to support the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast by voting for me in the podcast awards every day up until the 11th of August 2007. You can find me under the education section, and you know, don't forget to give a valid email address as they will randomly email a link to validate your vote. They say randomly, but it seems that most people are getting an email every time, so it's really important that you don't be shy with your email address. And with this episode being a few days late this week, sorry about that by the way, there's now less than a week to get your movement assignment image uploaded to the gallery at mbpgalleries.com. The participation has been a little bit low for this one, although it's probably going to bump up in the last few days as it usually does. If you have any ideas for the next or future assignments, by the way, please do let me know. I'm sort of running out of ideas here, and you know, it'll be good if you guys sort of let me know what you would like to do. If you don't, of course, I'll think of something myself, but you know, it would also be good to keep this interactive if you could drop me a line if you have any ideas yourself. Use either the contact form on martinbaileyphotography.com or private message from the forum, or actually just drop it into the forum, into the assignments forum there, publicly, and then everyone else can sort of throw their ideas around, and you know, we can hopefully find a good theme for the next one. Remember that the assignment can't require special equipment though, so you know, that really, like, if you were to say macro shots, then the only people that could get involved were people that actually have a macro lens. So we try and keep it away from that sort of stuff, you know, so that really gives as many people as possible a chance to benefit from getting involved and getting themselves a chance to win a print of your choice from my online gallery, and to get in the running for the yearly grand prize that will be awarded next year. The same goes for any feedback as well, though. If you have any topics that you want me to cover in a podcast, you know, do drop me a line. Thanks to all of those that have mailed in the past too. I receive so many emails from people sort of thanking me for the podcast and, you know, telling me how great they think it is, which is really, really cool. It's always great to hear from you. Of course, I'm open to negative feedback as well if you have any. But you know, when I receive the a lot of the email, it's really just a huge encouragement for me. And so, along that line, finally, I just wanted to quickly thank Dave Erickson from Wisconsin in the USA for your mail this week. I'm going to paraphrase a little here and not go into all of the details, but Dave said, I have discovered your podcast during this last week, and I'm so grateful for such a well-conceived and wonderfully executed piece of work. Your photo review format is ideally suited to learning. It so happens that I've been painting the exterior of our house this week, and your Q&A tips and episodes have been perfect company for me during the while painting. Perfect company for me and the paintbrush. So thanks, Dave, for the great mail, and I'm really pleased that you like the podcast and that you're enjoying it, and that it helped you through your, I don't know, maybe you found it a laborious task, but thanks very much for mailing me. And before we close, Dave also requested that I mention who made the music that I use in the intro and the housekeeping sections of the podcast. And this is a great idea. I've been asked a number of times, so I'm going to try and do this from now on. The rule will be that when I use music that I've bought for this purpose, I probably won't mention it, but when I use music for free from the Podsafe Music Network, the only obligation is to drop a link into the show notes, but as people do often ask about that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to follow Dave's advice and mention the artist and then let you sort of, you know the title of the track that's used, so that you can look them up yourself, and that will hopefully be a way for me to support the artist that I'm using the music of. So to kick that off, I'm going to tell you that this is a track by a band called Shams, and I've used a number of tracks of theirs on the podcast, and this particular one is called Creation, and it's probably one of my favorites. So with that, I'll say goodbye for this week, and have a great week doing whatever you do. Bye bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.